Hello, it's Layla, your mom friend, welcoming you to this week's episode of the Learning to Mom podcast. Here, I give you the scoop on all things pregnancy and birth, and I ask experts all of your gazillion first-time mom questions, from inductions to pelvic floor to C-section recovery. Let's dive into this week's episode. On today's episode, I sit down with Amy Lowney, a labor and delivery nurse turned holistic birth coach and childbirth educator. She owns and runs The Somatic Mother. First off, though, at the time of this recording, Amy's business was called Instinctive Birth and Beyond, but since then, she's renamed it to The Somatic Mother, so don't let that confuse you. Now, today's episode is a unique one and is truly an episode that I desperately needed during my pregnancy, but didn't have the resources then. So today we're talking about the most common medical interventions that you could experience or have during labor and delivery. We're breaking down each one and talking about what its purpose is, how it's administered, and the pros and cons of each one. So get out your notepad and your birth plan because you're going to want it during today's episode. Now, I will say, as we discuss the benefits and risks of each medical intervention, we really were kind of speaking about them from a point of view of a healthy, low-risk pregnancy. There are many, many cases where medical interventions are necessary. And I, for one, am so happy to live in a time of history where we can have these medical interventions to protect both us and our babies. But before we dive into all of this, it's time for me to feature this week's review, which is from Annie Weir, titled Great Resource. She writes, I love Layla's heart for empowering new moms. This podcast has such great information and is easy and enjoyable to listen to. Thank you so, so much, Annie, for this review. I am so glad that you're enjoying it and that it's serving you well. The whole goal of this podcast is for it to be easy and fun to listen to, but also being like jam-packed with information. So I'm absolutely relieved to hear that it's doing that for you. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to review the podcast. Now, if you could do me a favor and write a review wherever you're listening to this podcast on and tell me why you've been tuning in each week to the Learning to Mom podcast, it would mean the world to me. And you could be next week's featured review. Okay, enough with all this stuff. Let's get into the episode. Hi, Amy. Thanks so much for being here. Welcome to the Learning to Mom podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
I'm really excited. I know we have a lot to cover today. I feel like I always say that in these episodes. It's kind of my like routine. We have so much to cover today. Let's get into it. But we really do have a lot to cover today.
Well, birth is a lot. There's a lot to know.
So before we do that, could you just kind of introduce yourself to the listeners and share what spurred you to start Instinctive Birth and Beyond?
Absolutely. Yes. So a little bit about me. I'm a mom to three little boys. So we have a lot of energy going on in our lives. Married to a wonderful man who lets me just like run wild with all of my dreams I have. So that's great. But what really landed me where I'm at today, so currently I'm a craniosacral therapist. I'm a natural childbirth educator, and I'm just finishing up an Ayurvedic postpartum doula certification. So I'll be supporting moms like very holistically through herbs, body work, diet, rest in the postpartum period.
That's great.
And then I'm also, yes. Oh, it's like so beautiful. It's so nurturing. It's so, so needed in our world. And then I'm a holistic birth coach also, where I help guide moms throughout their pregnancies to help prepare for their births. But I wasn't like always in this like holistic crunchy world that I'm in. I was a registered nurse prior to where I'm at now. I was an RN for almost eight years. And my last 2 years were in labor and delivery. And though it was like amazing to be like there for birth, you're not really like, I'm putting quotes here, like quote unquote there, because you're just really like tending to like the monitor and the IVs and all the equipment. Like you're there to like, to be the safety the medical safety of the mom. And I was like, I want to be here with mom. I don't want to be doing all of the other things. So we need registered nurses, we need labor and delivery nurses, but it was just not the right place for me and like where my soul calling was. And so I ended up quitting, became a yoga teacher and a massage therapist. And I've just kind of been down this path ever since.
Ugh, you're so cool. I love it. So,
Quite say
when
that, but
did
thank you.
the holistic, you just called yourself crunchy, so the holistic, like crunchy side come out?
Oh God, like I think I was probably always a little crunchy.
Okay.
Like I remember being in nursing school and I was like, well, why are we talking about like this when there's like supplements out here or like herbs or, and I really loved when I had the time with moms, as a nurse to be like, in a moment where they're like, I need the epidural. And I was like, well, let's try the bath instead. And then we would do like pelvic rocking and circles in the warm water. And then bam, all of a sudden they're like ready to push. It's like, that was like, that's where I want to be. And so I've always had the crunchy, like Amy. I've always been the crunchy Amy.
Nice. All right.
Yeah.
Well, today we're talking all about birth interventions. Kind of the most common ones, I guess. But before we start really diving in there, first and foremost, why is it important to even know about birth interventions?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. Like as we were talking about all of this before, it was like, wait, what's that word? Wait, I've never heard that before. It is really overwhelming when you are not even in labor and hearing these terms and you don't know what they are, but when you're in labor and you're hearing these terms, it's easy to just like have to surrender it over to your provider and the staff because
Yeah.
you're very vulnerable. You're using a lot of energy to birth a baby. You don't really have the time to pause because your body's like going into birth and you can't like pause and just be like, wait, what is that? And I'm going to share a little bit about how you actually can pause in a really easy way to like look into this stuff and ask your provider, like, so that you can make an informed decision. And that's ultimately why it's important. You want to really know the whole story. You want to know what your options are, because I feel like when we don't know what our options are, that's when we feel blindsided. We don't feel like we have control over our story. And when we don't feel like we have control over our story, I feel like that's when things kind of get messy and don't feel good. You feel like your story is being taken over by somebody else. And I think ultimately that's when like you don't have the positive birth that you want. It's not necessarily about having an epidural or not having an epidural. It's about feeling in control of our story. So I think
Yeah.
it's really important to be able to make a fully informed decision and give true informed consent. And to be able to give true informed consent means you know what all of your options are. And to know
Yeah.
like what feels like right for you, what feels safe for you, because that's not always the same as your best friend or your mom. It's not the same as your doula or even your provider. And we need to be allowed to make best decision for ourselves.
Yeah, no, that's really good. Could we maybe just talk briefly about like how do you tell, okay, this is a medical emergency and I really do need that medical intervention versus they're just pushing me here because it's more comfortable for them to do their job?
I think that's a huge question, and that's like a lot of why this is important. To know this stuff before birth so you can have some of the terminology is great. And I'll just share this now is there's an acronym. It's called Using Your Brain. It's like out there all over. So many like different childbirth education courses teach it. But you can just, and sometimes there's like that emergency that's like you don't even get the chance to pause and ask these questions when it's like true emergency. But if you have that chance, so using your brain, you can stop and go like, well, what are the benefits of this intervention? The R is, what are the risks? A, are there any alternative options available to me at this time? Intuition. So that's like a huge one. So many of us are like so disconnected from our intuition. And I actually teach some of this in my childbirth course, because it's like, what is my gut telling me? Like, what is that inner voice saying? Because sometimes it could be saying like, everything's fine, but we have that little radar too. That's like, okay, they're telling me my baby's fine. They're telling me I'm fine, but something is wrong. And that I think is a huge guide. Like, our mom intuition is so strong. I think that's just like a huge guide there. And then there's N. So like, what happens if we do nothing? Right. So those are good questions to ask yourself. Those are good questions to ask your provider too. Because yeah, interventions are necessary. And like I said, what's right for like you might not be right for me. What's right for this pregnancy might not be right for the next pregnancy I have. Mm-hmm. And we need to be able to just navigate situation by situation. And it's like textbook forward as like birth is, it's really unpredictable. And so,
yeah, so true.
Being able to be educated, and then I think again, being able to have that control, you know, like feeling like you know what's going on and that you have the choice, in your birth, because again, it might not be right for your provider. Your provider might need to be hurrying over to another birth. But also there might be very clear things going on that baby's not tolerating what's happening. And we do need to maybe step it up and get baby out.
Mm-hmm. Statistically speaking, what are the interventions that you may run into in your birth?
Yeah. So we could like look at a whole like wide range of interventions, right? So like there's everything down to like the membrane sweeps that could be, and cervical checks that could be taking place in the office, to those same things in the birth room, all the way to like the external fetal monitors, the little belts that go on when you're in labor, to the IV in your arm. Gosh, some people are even like to putting like the hospital gown on, you know, and feeling like you're a patient. You know, and then all the way true. To like, yes, isn't it? And then to like the things that you would really think of, like induction, Pitocin, you know, breaking your waters, cesarean section, epidural, you know, there's just a whole wide range. And to be able to go, oh, wow, like this one little thing, like breaking my water, can actually lead to so many more interventions. Which essentially is called the cascade of interventions. I highly recommend moms really look into that. And it's just this idea that one intervention can lead to another intervention, can lead to another intervention. It's like this cascade down.
Yep.
And again, it's not about shame. It's just about being informed and knowing like, oh, if my doctor wants to break my water and I'm like, yes, please get this going. I've been in labor too long. I'm uncomfortable. I want to get this going, but I wasn't prepared for the pain that comes along with that. And now I am getting pain medication that I didn't want. And then, you know, it kind of snowballs. And I think that's really like what I'm talking about here is like, you don't want to be blindsided because then you don't feel like you're in control.
Yeah. That was 100% my story. I relate to that so much. I went in to be induced and I was just ignorant and I didn't do enough research. One, didn't know that the contractions would be a lot worse. Two, didn't know that they were going to have to up the monitoring of the baby severely. And so here I am like hooked up to all of these monitors because I'm on Pitocin. Then basically I was restricted in my movement. So I had such an image of like, I'm going to be on my yoga ball. I'm going to be as active as possible. All of a sudden they restricted my movement to the bed. And then I was like, well, F it. I might as well just get the epidural.
Yeah, so like it's all intense. Of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and like, you're like, just step in for an induction, but you're not, you know, haven't, you don't know that all these other things kind of snowball.
Yes.
And if you 100%. Know that, then you can make like a fully informed decision. And then you also feel like, oh, I knew this was coming. So that's okay.
Right. Let's just talk about, I guess, each kind of going down each of those interventions. We can talk about the pros and cons of them, how they're administered, why it's administered if you're a healthy, low-risk pregnancy for each of those common interventions.
Perfect.
So first thing first, let's talk about cervical checks.
Yes. Okay. Boy, so cervical checks, they are so common, aren't they? Like, it's like once you hit 37 weeks, people are like, how dilated are you? How dilated are you? And I'll just quickly tell a little story. So I was 5 centimeters dilated with my second son. First 6 weeks, it's like 5 to 6 weeks. Okay. So when he decided like, oh, it's go time, like snap, he was out. But my third baby, right? Everyone's like, oh, third baby, he's going to be coming so fast. I hadn't dilated at all. My cervix hadn't softened at all. I was barely a fingertip at 42 weeks. And I had him like 2 hours later. So cervical checks are literally just a subjective measure of what your cervix is doing in any given moment of time. So as you're in labor, cervical change is like, they almost use it as like the standard of progress, right? Like, well, if you haven't made any cervical change in an hour, like we'll give you 1 more hour. So let's just give you another hour and see if there's any more change. But our bodies aren't textbooks. And again, our cervix, like, it doesn't go like, oh, we're in stage one of labor, so we're going to stay dilated here. And then we're going to go into stage two in an hour. Our bodies just flow at the rate and rhythm that our bodies flow. And a cervical check is just a measurement in any given moment.
So then what even are the pros to it?
I think like it can be beneficial if you've been in labor for a very, very, very long time. And like, is your cervix changing? Is baby's head engaged? Like you can get some information. Like, yes, there is some cervical change happening. Okay, you now have like a bulging bag that I can feel during this check. I can also feel if baby's head is engaged in the pelvis here. Okay. So there is some indications that is helpful, but I feel like it can be, you know, really impede on a mom's labor, you know, for multiple reasons.
Yeah.
Like having somebody's, you know, fingers up in your vagina, it can be very uncomfortable. For some people, it can be very, very triggering. And it's just like your body's like, okay, halt for just a second here. Like it's just a little bit of a disruption. So there are times where it does give information. And sometimes it is reassuring as mom in labor to be like, okay, I'm feeling a lot of intensity going on. I'm feeling a lot of pain. Okay, there is something happening. And it's kind of reassuring to our minds as you're in labor.
So you did just mention fingers in your vagina. So how is it administered to someone who's never had a cervical check?
So provider will put on a sterile glove and then have sterile gel. And they take their pointer finger and their middle finger, and you'll be laying back on your back, and they'll insert their two fingers into the vagina and go all the way up until they touch the cervix. You can feel how thick it is or thin, and then you can feel how open it is. And by feeling how like open it is, you just are feeling if you can get a fingertip in all the way to like almost like opening the fingers up like scissors, you know? And when you can no longer like open your fingers any wider, that's about 10 centimeters. Just like an inch and a half in between fingers is like 4 centimeters. Fingertip is like a centimeter.
I see. Okay. I have had them. And now I understand when you say how subjective it is. Okay. Yeah. No freaking kidding. Very subjective. It's just like how big your scissor open. Okay. Crazy.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Let's talk about IVs.
Okay. So an IV is like a little catheter that goes in through the skin into a vein. The idea is we want to have this in, and I'm speaking as the nurse here, like we want to have this in case there's an emergency, in case you start hemorrhaging in case we have to hurry and get in for a C-section, in case. Or if you do want an epidural, you know, then we don't have to put the IV in when you're like really having intense contractions. Okay. It's just there. Okay. So like benefits do include that there's IV access in the moments of emergencies, or if you want to implement other interventions, you know, if like baby's not doing well, you can do IV fluids. You have that access to be able to do the fluids that are necessary prior to the epidural. There's also this other line that they can draw labs off of. Yeah, I would say those are probably like some of the big benefits.
Yeah. What about the cons?
For me, like an IV was like, I'm used to this. It's an IV. The cons are, it's really painful for some people. Depending on the placement, it can interfere with your movement. You know, like sometimes they put them like in the wrist. And so like, you're trying to like lean on things, but this IV keeps poking you, or then like
that's
the elbow,
so true.
You can't bend your arm. Yeah.
And so can you like, ask, like, can we put it somewhere else?
No, you can ask.
Okay.
Like in the forearm is probably like gives you the most mobility. And also with any intervention, you don't have to do anything you don't want to do. Mm-hmm. Whether they say it's hospital policy or not, you can be like, can I see that policy in place? And I don't think it's actually a policy that they have to be in. I think that gets thrown around a lot, but I'd say it is more of like a convenience thing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it is needed if you are going to be induced, because they're, you know, due to the risks of some of the medications, you'd probably want that access, but it can interfere. And if you have IV fluids hooked up, you're also limited on how much movement you're going to be able to do as you're pulling a pole around too.
Yeah. If you've been obsessing over My Little Songbird as much as I have, then you will be thrilled to know that we now have a discount, baby. That's right. In full transparency, I don't see a single cent from this. It's not an affiliate thing, but it does give you a big discount considering that they don't do discounts elsewhere. And this is stuff that you are really gonna love. Montessori inspired climbing gyms, wooden blocks, the whole nine yards. Use Learning to Mom 15, that's in all caps, and then obviously the numbers 15 at the end, for 15% off their website at mylittlesongbird.com. That's Learning to Mom 15. If you've been looking for Montessori style toys, this is the shop for you. I'm not kidding you. One of the things that I'd specifically recommend that you check out for your newborn are the hanging toy gyms. Like the things that you put your newborn under that dangle above them for them to look at. There's a lot of variety and they are all beautiful. I would also recommend that you check out their teethers, because you're going to want one with a baby. Trust me. Go to mylittlesongbird.com to understand the hype. And don't forget to use Learning to Mom 15 at checkout for 15% off. The next intervention I want to make sure we talk about today is monitoring. I know that's monitoring. So broad, but.
Oh gosh, there's probably like so much I could go into, but so external fetal monitors. And for anybody who doesn't know what those are, it's like when you see the picture of the mom in labor, like on TV or on the computers, it's like the two little button things and the belt that go around the belly. So one monitor measures the contractions. And so it measures like, as they're like getting intense, peaking and coming down. And so that's like the wave you see on the screen. The other monitor monitors the baby's heart rate. And so it gives you a lot of information. You can see what the baby's heart rate is doing with contractions. You can see what the baby's heart rate is doing like in between. And so it does give really good information, but there's actually no evidence that external fetal monitoring in like a normal healthy pregnancy, like helps prevent negative outcomes. So somebody who has medical conditions, you know, and there's suspicions that maybe baby isn't doing well, or the placenta isn't doing well, or mom has health conditions that might interfere with that, it is beneficial to see how baby's tolerating. Currently, what like the standard is, so when you're in the hospital in labor, you're on the monitor, I want to say for about 20 minutes out of every hour. So they can just get what they call as a good strip.
Okay.
And there's like all sorts of guidelines they kind of have in this. But benefits are you can see how baby is doing. You know what baby's heart rate is. You know how often contractions are happening. You can't really exactly tell how quite intense they truly are, the contractions are, based on the monitor, but you can tell how often they're happening, how long they're lasting, and what baby's heart rate is doing. Very beneficial in moments of like induction, or if you start, start putting in other interventions that could cause fetal distress, baby not tolerating labor well, very beneficial because we need to know that information. However, if you are like a healthy mom with no health conditions, it really can impede your movement and labor because you have these two cords. They do have monitors that you can like strap around your shoulder and walk, but it's like then any big movements you're making, the monitors like move around and then the nurse comes in and she's fixing them and then she's holding them and then you get to move some more and then it's still like, wait, come in, I'm going to move them around. And so it can really disrupt like the natural unfolding of a labor. And if you don't have that little carrier device, you're just like at the bedside, you know, and you might be able to like be on the ball there or like sway next to the bed, but it can really impede movement for sure.
What about internal monitoring?
So there is a little like stick device. So to be able to do that, mom's waters need to be broken or released already. But you can actually get this little like stick up there kind of next to baby's head, and it can monitor like the intensity of contraction. So you get a better measure of that. And then to be able to monitor baby's head internally, they screw in a little electrode onto baby's scalp. And so benefits are, you know, sometimes you need to know that information and you're not getting a good read. And that information is really important if there's an emergency that's arising, right? But what can come with that is, I've seen, and I don't want to like share this out of fear, but it's like, what are the risks? Babies was just a little positioned odd and a nurse screwed that little electrode right into the cheek. I think we culturally don't think babies feel anything. But it's like, of course they do. They feel pain. And like to have a little electrode screwed to the top of your head.
Yeah.
Again, it's like risk versus benefit.
Right.
Sometimes that is much more of a benefit than having a big emergency and you don't even know it's happening. But, you know, baby can have infection, mom can have infection due to those internal monitors. And then just like I said, you can risk misplacing it.
Yikes. You said that it's inserted. So it's kind of similar to a cervical check.
Yeah. So you like go in the same way you would a cervical check. And, you know, you're feeling for a few different things here. You're feeling for like baby's head. You're also feeling for like soft spots because you don't want to screw it into a soft spot. And so you're going in with one hand to do like a cervical check. And then the other hand brings that in and screws it in.
Sorry, I'm just not medical. So it's like,
ooh, intense. Well, and that's just it. Like for me, I'm like, oh, it's medical. You know, it doesn't bother me. Some people it's like, this is intense. And it is intense.
I'm one of those people. Let me tell you. Okay. Next, let's talk about induction. I know there was four specific induction interventions that you wanted to chat about. One being, or I guess grouped together, Cervidil and Cytotec. Hopefully I'm saying that right. Let's talk about those.
So first off, like an intervention is just like when you're, or an induction, when you're not like currently in active labor yet. And so it like initiates labor. And so, I guess even as I'm saying this, it's important to know, like, there isn't just like one way an induction takes place. There's so many considerations of, you know, do you have health conditions? Is there a medical reason? What your provider prefers, like what your cervix is doing, what position baby's in. So it's not all just like down this line.
Yeah.
But these are kind of the most common. But Cervidil and Cytotec, so they're two different medications. Ultimately, what they do is just help like soften the cervix, and then they can start to initiate contractions. Cervidil, it almost looks like a little tampon, but it's not like round like a tampon, it's flat. And so they go in just like doing a cervical check and just like put it right up to the cervix. What that does is, you know, it releases these prostaglandins and helps the cervix starting to soften. and hopefully contractions start. The nice thing about Cervidil is if like the mom is really sensitive to it and she starts contracting too much or a lot, you can just pull it out. So that is a nice option. Cytotec is a pill, and that's inserted the same way, but it's kind of pushed up into the cervix and it does the same thing. The only difference though, they're just slightly different medications, and you know, if mom doesn't tolerate it or baby's not tolerating it, you can't really pull it out. But
okay,
at least when I was practicing, they were both used for different reasons.
Okay.
So I don't know what like the standard is between those, but it is helpful in induction, right? It helps.
Yeah.
Helps thin the cervix out, can help even open it up a little bit, and then it can help just kind of kickstart labor. The risks though, it can be intense because what those medications are doing in a few hours is what your body is just trying to do over weeks, over days. Mm-hmm. And so it can be intense. And then, like I was just saying, your body can not tolerate it. So you can have, it's called like a hypertonic uterus. You're contracting too much and your baby's not tolerating it. And so, you know, then there's other interventions like IV fluids and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, and then of course, like with any medication, there's like the big risks of like fetal distress and emergency C-section, uterine rupture. But those are much more rare.
Is that kind of all that you had to say about Cervidil and Cytotec before we move on?
Yeah.
Awesome.
So.
Next, yeah. Foley bulb.
Yes. So did you have the Foley bulb?
I had the Foley bulb. So let me tell my story.
Yes.
So I go in at like 7 p.m. I want to say is when the Foley bulb was inserted. And the nurse says, you know, it's going to take a while, like get comfy. So, and we knew this, we knew induction can take a long time. So we're like, you know, I'm setting up my shows and like, I haven't, you know, I had all this stuff to like, you know, string Christmas lights and make the room all like comfy and cozy. And I had this like whole vision. And of course, like 2 hours later, we were in labor. And I remember turning to the nurse and I was like, I'm not sleeping tonight, am I? And she's like, probably not. So first I was going to have the Foley bulb in the evening. And then Pitocin was supposed to be administered in the morning at, I don't know, sometime in the morning. And it ended up just advancing so quickly, so fast that Pitocin would just administer just like hours later.
Yeah.
And then I was in it. So anyway, Foley bulb.
I love that though, because it was like, it worked. And I think we're using Foley bulbs so much more frequently now, because the cool thing about them is like, it's not medication. There isn't a whole lot of risks.
Okay.
That come along with a Foley bulb.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about some of those risks then. The benefit, risks. And how it's administered.
So how it's administered, it's basically just like a Foley catheter. So like the long tube, and they, you know, put it up into the cervix and then fill the little
It was not
ball.
Comfortable to all the women out there. Oh. It was not a good experience, but it was relatively fast.
Yes, it is not. I have not had it, but I've been the one to like be there with plenty of moms. And they're just like, oh my gosh. Because they end up filling, you know, the little balloon up at the end that's in the cervix with saline.
I thought that it like blows up there. I'm up here and they're doing it all down there. So in my mind, it was like this stick with a water balloon on the end. And as I progressed, the water balloon grew to dilate my cervix.
No, they kind of just go in and fill it up. So like your cervix is kind of forced open. So that's probably why it's so uncomfortable, right? It's like open up. And the goal of that is to like your cervix is kind of pushed open. And whatever reason, like whether it's like the bag of waters kind of peels away from the cervix, or body's like, ooh, okay, we're opening up. This is sending signals to release oxytocin. So when our cervix opens, like there's a message to our brain that says, hey, we need more oxytocin. And so then you kind of start the cycle of labor. Yeah. So some women, it's just not enough. And some women, it's just the perfect amount. And so, the risks, like I said, are like, it's not a medication, or maybe the benefits, the benefits, are like, it's not a medication, which is really nice when you're having a fear about not wanting medication. It's been generally safe. Yeah, like there's not a whole lot of risks. Like risks.
What about, does it impede movement?
I would say it probably can. You have like a catheter sticking out, but I mean, what we would always do with our moms, and you can probably speak to this, is like, we'd still have the little pad there and the little underwear, you know, to put on. And so you could still move around.
Yeah. I was still moving around, but it wasn't comfortable. Like until it got taken out, I was a lot more, I was uncomfortable basically until I got to 4, whatever the centimeter is, that dilation that you need to be. And then they removed it.
Yeah, I bet. It's just uncomfortable. And I imagine there's like a lot of pressure there. And then you also have the rest of the Foley like catheter, like sticking out of you, like the big long tube.
Okay. Yeah. Pitocin.
Your face right now, you're like, ooh, Pitocin. So I'm just kind of talking about Pitocin in induction, because then we're going to talk about it in augmentation after. Okay. So Pitocin is, it's just like the synthetic form of oxytocin. And so most of the time it's used like in induction or augmentation when things slow down in labor. And then like standardly it's used in postpartum. Like they give you like a big dose of it to help you expel the placenta quicker than just resting and letting it come out on its own. So it's used like a lot of different times throughout labor, it could be. But so again, it's just the synthetic form of oxytocin. And oxytocin is the hormone that stimulates labor and contractions. And it's also in charge of breastfeeding. It's like the love hormone that like gets the body feeling good. So it's the synthetic form of that. So that's why it's used, because it sends the message to the body, go into labor, right? Contract more, contract harder. So in induction, it's going to help stimulate those contractions. And it's like a whiff of it. Like the tiniest amount sent into your body is going to like get things going. The nice thing about Pitocin is if it's too much, they can turn it down. If it's not enough, you can turn it up. And it's these tiny little increments. You just kind of try and find where baby's tolerating it and mom's tolerating it.
But they do turn it up.
Yes. If needed. Yes.
So know that they will, you know, up it as you progress through labor.
Yeah. You're like, I've been through this. I'm like seeing your face here. It's intense.
That was another cascading thing, was like, I mean, you know, you have the Foley bulb, I'm on Pitocin. So then they had to monitor babies more carefully to make sure that the baby was tolerating it. So then I was basically restricted in movement. In hindsight, I think I would have pushed back more, knowing what I know now through like all of these episode recordings. I could have pushed back and just been like, are you really struggling? Or is it just because like I'm making your job more difficult?
Yeah.
I didn't know until after I gave birth to the baby. Yeah. Women, the contractions that you experience when you're on Pitocin are not normal contractions. Like there is no wave. It's instead, it's just like, bam. Bam. Yeah. There is no wave.
Like, normally you get to like ease into it. It's like, okay, ease in. And it's like, no, we're going to go from the contractions you'd have maybe in pre-labor to like the contraction intensity that you have in like active labor, except your body's not in active labor yet. And so your body's trying to like catch up. And so it is intense. And I've seen women kick ass at a natural birth or an unmedicated birth with Pitocin, but they were like, I know this is going to be intense, but until you know how intense it's going to be, it's like, you need to be prepared. Yeah.
So that's a con. What are some of the other cons?
I think this would probably be policy. Like you have to be on the monitor. It is a big risk. Baby can have fetal distress when maybe they're not quite prepared for labor yet. They have these huge contractions suddenly like slamming them. So you have to be hooked up to the monitor for baby's sake, but also to see what your contractions are doing, because there could be a point where like you just, they have, you're getting too much and like your uterus is just contracted and not relaxing. Yeah. It's like in a contraction, it's like contract, relax, contract, relax. And it can be too much. And what happens with that is then, and this is rare, but it is a possibility. it can just be like overcontracted and then rupture. And that goes into like emergent situation, emergency section, hysterectomy. Very scary, very rare, but it's important to know these things so you can make the informed decision, right? Just knowing that like the intensity can come up, right? And maybe you weren't quite wanting like pain medication.
Yeah.
It does increase your chance of wanting pain medication.
Yeah.
And if you know that's what you want, that's fine. But if you didn't, again, you could be blindsided.
Yeah.
And then it does increase your chance of having a C-section.
Interesting. I didn't know that last one.
Okay. I think it's more, so maybe the actual Pitocin doesn't, I should clarify, but I would say the cascade of interventions.
Okay. That takes place. I can see that.
Yeah.
I don't remember if we talked about how it's administered or not, but it's through an IV in case we didn't talk about that. Okay. Now moving on to the four things that we wanted to talk about with augmentation interventions. Before we jump right into those four, someone who is not science-y or medical, what is augmentation?
So that's a great question. Cause again, it's like Spanish if you're not familiar with this. But augmentation, it's basically when labor is initiated. Right. So you're in labor, it started, and for some reason, like things slow down, which sometimes that's just a physiologic response in our bodies. Our bodies are like, hey, we need a minute, trying to like collect energy here, or like baby needs to get in a better position, or like there's things going on, labor slow down. Or your provider just wants to like move things along, a convenience thing, right? Or there's some indication that we need to get things going quicker, right?
Okay.
Like you have a medical condition, maybe baby's not tolerating it, kind of the whole array of things that could be going on.
That's helpful. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Or even like you get pain medication and your labor totally slows down.
Mm.
And so you start doing other interventions to kind of kick things in gear again.
So ironic, but here we are. All right. First thing that we want to talk about regarding augmentation interventions, artificial rupture of membranes. Let's chat about that.
So I feel like haunted as I'm probably talking about this. So my first labor, this is like my cascade of interventions. This was like what led me on the entire path I'm on now of, you know, I go into labor and I'm laboring, I'm feeling good, I'm excited. And my doctor comes in, he checks my cervix. And like, all of a sudden there's this like crochet hook. And I was like, what is that? And he's just like, I'm just going to break your water quick. Okay. And you know, I'm in this moment, I'm a nurse, but I was still like, wait, what? Like, you don't just labor and then have a baby. Oh my God. So I was like you of like mind blown on so many things I learned after that birth. And he breaks my water.
Oh my gosh.
And it was just like,
oh my gosh.
0 to 60, like snap of a
finger. To just come in and be like, I'm not going to ask you. I'm just going to come in. And he only said, I'm going to break your water because you asked. He would have literally just been like, open up. Here we go. Yeah,
and kind of looked at me like the eyes, like, okay, you know, like, and I was like, okay. Like, I don't know. I guess this is just what you do. So again, maybe I gave consent, but it certainly wasn't informed consent. And that's like why this is important. So artificial rupture of membranes is different than like, I think they call it spontaneous rupture of membranes. So like your water breaking.
So spontaneous would be it's on its own.
On its own. Yes.
Okay. All right. So artificial rupture.
Yeah, they come in, it's called an amniotomy. So like that sounds terrifying. But what happens is they go in like a cervical check, right? And you have to be dilated at least a little bit. And for baby's head to be down far enough and engaged in the pelvis here. But they take a sterile hook, it looks just like a little crochet hook. And they go in and just kind of like snag the bag of waters and break it.
Okay.
So like benefits, of course, there's always benefits. Labor might just be like taking forever. Mom might be tired. Maybe there's a medical reason to like get things going quicker. Like it can, like having the bag of waters still in place. So like, it's like a big water balloon around your baby. And it's like your uterus is contracting. And so there's like kind of like a buoyancy around your baby when the bag of waters is still intact. And so like, they're not getting kind of like squeezed quite as much. And maybe not as intense for them. And so it can take that down. I mean, so like you're thinking of like squeezing a baby and a water balloon out. It's going to take a little bit longer because there's more there for your uterus to like push out. And so it can make it go quicker. And yeah, I would say like those are probably like the big benefits.
Okay.
Benefits for your providers getting things going quicker, right?
Yeah.
But, or even if you just like really want to. But like I know so many moms that it's like, holy crap, I had no idea that like breaking my water was gonna make my body respond so intensely. But it's like when you think about it physiologically, your body, like when your water breaks, your body's like, oh, we got to get this baby out. Like it's time to go. Mm. Like let's start labor. And there are some women who like it spontaneously breaks and they don't quite go into labor and maybe need a little support. But ultimately, like your body's like, okay, it's go time. So you could be like feeling good. And then all of a sudden, like, bam, you're in full labor. Lots of pain, lots of intensity. The other risks are like fetal distress. So I mentioned like the water balloon and baby. So the cord's floating around in there. All of a sudden, all this like cushiony fluid is gone. The cord could get like compressed in between a body part. They might just not tolerate it. They might not tolerate that like pressure change really well.
Mm.
The cord can actually come down first before the baby's head. Again, this is rare. And this is where like, when they're actually doing this, your doctor should be making sure the baby is like down there and the head is down there so that there's no risk of the cord coming down. But it is a risk, and that is like true emergency. And then infection for mom and baby. You know, once those waters, your bag of waters is released, you are at risk of infection.
And I did hear, believe, if my brain is thinking right. I had Taylor on, who's a birth prep coach, and she had this and she didn't realize that then she was on the clock for a C-section.
Yeah. I feel like most hospitals, it's like the time your water breaks, you have like 24 hours and then it's like, all right, no more. So, I mean, I think at this point, whether your water breaks on its own or not, it's like at this point, like introduce the least amount of foreign things as possible.
Now moving into Pitocin in augmentation.
Again, the synthetic form of oxytocin. And like, sometimes our labor stalls out. I said for like physiologic reasons, sometimes our body just needs to pause. Sometimes like baby just needs to move around a little. Like baby is like the key and our pelvis is like the keyhole. And they're just trying to like wiggle down and get into the right spot to fit. So our body just slows down. Maybe we don't feel safe. Maybe we had medications and like labor slow down, whatever the reason is. And Pitocin kind of kickstarts contractions again.
Okay.
So yeah, just kind of like what we talked about, like,
okay,
it can be really intense, right? Like things are slowing down. A lot of women towards like right before they're about to push like that 8-9 centimeters, they'll just slow down because their body's like, ooh, let's breathe for a sec because we got a lot of work to do here.
Okay.
Medical world's like, oh, failure to progress. We need to start Pitocin. And if yikes, that doesn't work, then we'll go to a C-section. But sometimes your body just needs to like chill for a sec.
Because it knows, okay, I'm about to summit this mountain and I need to take a quick little water break here.
Yes.
So once you're on Pitocin in augmentation, are you on it for the rest of labor or are they just like on it, you know, do, 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 and then you're kickstarted again and then they take you off?
I think it probably depends on the provider. I was going to say that earlier, like if you are getting induced with Pitocin, ask, like, I always encourage, like, take it slow, but ask if you can get it turned off once you hit a point, because
okay,
some people, some women, like it can just help kickstart things and then you don't need it. But a lot of times the providers just leave it on. Yeah. So I think this is kind of probably that same thing, but depending on why your labor slowed down, like if you have pain medications on board that's making your labor slow down, you might just need it to help kind of keep things going throughout the rest. It's all just like situational. And
right.
Yeah, I just hope providers are willing to work with moms, you know, in those moments. Yeah.
Looking for an innovative, unique, must-have item to add to your baby registry that will be a lifesaver to you once your baby is eating solids? Mom Friend, I got you. The flipping holder solves all of your problems that you'll face when it comes to squeezy food and juice pouch messes. I don't know if you remember or not, but on my episode on how to create your baby registry, I mentioned the importance of thinking ahead and making sure you include stuff that you'll need far beyond just infancy and newborn life. This is one of those items that's totally worth getting now while you're thinking about it, or adding it to your baby registry to make sure that you have it when you need it. The flipping holder was made by a Minnesota mom of four after a very messy plane ride. You just place the pouch inside the flipping holder and your kid can't squeeze the outside, making it look like a volcano has erupted in your car, your kitchen, living room, or church pew. It's so easy for your kid to still enjoy their treat, but you no longer have to clean up the mess. This is a win-win, let me tell ya. It's manufactured in Minnesota and the orders are packed and shipped by a neighborhood mom or dad. Check them out at flippingholder.com and receive 20% off along with free shipping with the code LEARNINGTOMOM, all caps. The link is in the episode show notes for your convenience. Next up, assisted delivery.
So assisted delivery. So
what is that?
This is when like the provider uses an instrument, and just let me get there first because that can sound scary, to help pull baby out of the birth canal. So there's two kinds. Forceps are like these little like
tongs is what I
tongs. In my, yes.
Okay.
Good work.
That's what I think of
like, it. Yeah. It's like tongs that kind of go around the baby's head. And like, as mom's pushing, the provider's pulling baby out. Those aren't as commonly used anymore. So we have like vacuums. And what a little vacuum is, it's like this little round thing and it goes right on top of baby's head and they kind of pump it to get that suction on baby's head. And then as mom's pushing, they're pulling that cord to help pull baby out.
Oh, okay. So I'm imagining it administered like we've talked about so many times with the Foley bulb, cervical check, et cetera. It's administered that way. And then pump, 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 stuck on there. I'm in active labor when I'm like pushing the baby out and they see me, and then they pull it and then they stop once I'm done pushing.
Pushing. Yeah.
Awesome.
And the only difference here though is like baby's crowding at this point, or you can at least like see baby's head.
Okay.
So baby has to be a certain station, like just about out. And you know, like, again, this is beneficial in those emergency situations where baby's just like, you're seeing on the monitor, baby's really, really, really not tolerating. Mom's maybe exhausted. She's depleted. She's been in labor for super long, whatever it is. And baby's just like, I'm not doing well. And we might not be at the place where we have 3 minutes to continue this. You know, this should be utilized as like emergent situation. But I have seen providers that are like, oh, we got to get this going. Or you've been pushing for almost 5 hours. We need to hurry this along. And it's like, well, baby's coming. Can we just give her 20 more minutes? And so it should be reserved for emergencies.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I think that is kind of the pros and cons, like kind of obvious. Pros, if it's used in an emergency, then it's a big pro.
Yeah.
Con, does not sound like an enjoyable experience.
Yeah.
And that could be pretty traumatic.
Right. And like traumatic for baby, but also for like mom's pelvic floor.
Mm.
So I'd say those are like the big things, you know, incontinence, postpartum bleeding, pelvic floor dysfunction, stuff like that.
All of that. Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
The last question in augmentation is episiotomy. First, what is it? Secondly, you know.
Yeah.
You know the other questions.
Yeah. So episiotomy, it's just like when baby's like beginning to crown. Again, baby's not tolerating well. Maybe, maybe not. And they basically just take sterile scissors and cut through the perineum. And they don't go like down straight through the anus. They go like towards an angle. So what that would be like, maybe like 4 or 5 o'clock, or I don't know, 7 or 8 o'clock, because you don't want to go straight down, but it's cutting through the skin, the fascia, the muscle, and ultimately it creates more space for baby. And I've seen this you know, be used very successfully in emergent situations. Again, it should be reserved for emergencies. I've only seen it one time where it was just like used as a convenience tool, and it's detrimental, I feel like, when that happens.
Yeah.
I can't say there's like huge risks to baby at that point, but like, think about it, mom, like you're cutting through all of that tissue. There's yeah. risk of bleeding, and there's risk of infection, pelvic floor dysfunction.
Just postpartum experience, not great.
Yeah. And you can create a lot of pain later on. So if used appropriately, it can be life-saving. If not, it has lifelong negative effects.
Dang.
On mom. Yeah.
Okay. That was kind of our augmentation ones. Sorry. Yeah. We're just like, bam, 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 trying to get through it. Let's also talk about a few other interventions that didn't necessarily fit into those two categories. I wanted to chat about epidurals.
Yeah. And I think that's huge. Like, they're very common, very necessary for some moms, you know, and again, you just want to know if, so you're not blindsided. So an epidural, it's just like a form of pain medication, but how it's administered is they take like a needle, go in like in between your vertebrae, usually like
in your
the
back.
Lower levels in your back. Yes. Very long needle. They numb you up and you're kind of rounded, and they go into like the epidural space. So it's like around like the spinal cord, and there's just a little space, and it just kind of hooks just gently in there, and then they administer medication through that. So normally they give like a big dose just to kind of get you numb, and then it's constant like narcotic administration from there. And it goes into the space around your spinal nerves, and so it numbs from like that point down.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what an epidural is. And I think a lot of women like don't know that like fentanyl is normally used.
Yeah, I just and stuff. Learned that like 2 weeks ago.
So I think that's important, and being able to make that informed decision, mm-hmm. you know, for yourself. But yeah, so the benefits, like pain relief and rest. Like sometimes women just need that relief, and sometimes they want that yeah. relief too. And that's fair. Yeah, I think that's the big thing. Sometimes it's just, you've gone so long, you're so exhausted, you need to sleep, you need to rest. And sometimes like some women are just like, give me the pain meds, I'm good. So you have that option. And I think that's wonderful that we have it now. But as long as you also know the risks too. And so because it is a narcotic, you can have the risk of like decreased blood pressure, decreased heart rate, drowsiness, like all the things that would come along with that. And what that really means is because you have all of those decreased, so does baby. And so baby's heart rate can go down because your blood's not pumping as efficiently as it should in labor. And so baby can not tolerate that. And then again, you know, they start doing interventions after that point of like IV fluids and oxygen. But what that can lead to is the increased risk of assisted delivery, like we were talking about, the episiotomy, because you're having a harder time pushing because you can't feel. Cesarean section, because you know it can slow labor down, it can slow those contractions down, and so either you're deemed like failure to progress, or baby's just really not tolerating that anymore. And I would say it absolutely does increase pushing times, because you don't have quite that force to push. You're like pushing with everything else instead of your uterus pushing, and then that can lead to like increased bleeding and pelvic floor dysfunction.
Never thought about that.
Like, thank God we have this. I mean, women just did it without it, but when you need it, thank God we have it.
I would say two cons as well that you didn't just mention that came to me through my experience was it limits your like birthing positions.
Totally.
So know that. So in my mind, I was thinking I was going to have a natural birth, you know, and then I ended up getting induced, which had all that cascade of interventions. Didn't foresee that happening. So then I got the epidural. And in my mind, when I was preparing for birth, I thought, if I end up getting an epidural, I do not want a birth on my back. And then if I end up getting an epidural, my nurse will know like what positions. No, I should have been informed. Like there are some other positions you can be in on if you have an epidural, but you need to make sure you know what those are, and you should have like practiced them prior.
Totally.
You know, and maybe even have printouts and give them to your nurse and is like, this is what we're doing.
Such a good point. Yeah. Cause you are like, when you're numb, you're absolutely going to be confined to bed.
Yeah.
You have to have the monitors on. You're hooked to an IV. You're possibly hooked to oxygen. So you have like all these cords and you need to be moving in labor. So I know it's like standard to like turn mom to the side and then turn mom to the other side. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like you said, you are allowed to move. Like I've had moms on hands and knees with an epidural, or even like in a position where they're leaning on like the squatting bar. So
yeah,
at least you're upright. So I love that you just said that, because yeah. And some nurses will advocate for that all day. Some nurses don't have the time to, and then some just don't even know. And they're like, whatever, lay on your back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then another con is just your postpartum experience in those first, you know, that first 24 hours after you give birth. If you've had an epidural, think about it. Like you have been so drugged up, you can't really just get up and like walk. And I've talked to women who have had natural births, and it's been like a night and day difference in the postpartum experience they had compared to me, because I was on all these drugs.
Absolutely.
Not necessarily a con too, just that you're aware. I was just ignorant. I'm not a nurse. You say you want an epidural and it still takes like 30 minutes for the, or longer, depending on your hospital, for the anesthesiologist to come to you. Be aware
absolutely.
Of that. So yes. Maybe start saying that like before you really need it. But also, which we didn't talk about, another con is that it could wear off.
Yes.
Or it could only impact one side.
Yep. I've seen that. I've seen both. And so, if that happens, you call the anesthesiologist back and they are either going to readminister one, reposition it, or they can even like give you like a bolus dose. Like there are options for that. It's just making sure you advocate for yourself, because it is such a possibility. Or even there's a risk that they go too far and you are full spinal. Like usually like epidurals, you can have a little bit of movement.
Oh my gosh.
And that's what happened to me, and mine was like full spinal, numb from like probably like under my collarbones down. And yeah. And like, no, too, like this is an option. You can ask your nurse to turn it off. If you're like, okay, baby's not tolerating it, this isn't going well, we're talking about a C-section here, can you turn it off? And granted, that kind of sucks, because then you're like getting pain, but you're still confined to your bed. But maybe it's a better option than for you than going in for a C-section. And that's what I advocated for with my birth, was turn the epidural off. I will feel this intensity, get baby out. And because it wears off fairly quickly.
Dang. Also about the administration or whatever the word is of an epidural, if you're planning on having one and you don't know. So what you talked about at the beginning, just kind of want to shed more light. So yeah, I called the anesthesiologist. It was, you know, 2 a.m. or whatever. So it took a while for him to come over. And then you have to like sit up and you have to be able, you have to be at a point in your birth where you are able to hold still for a while. So they like swing you over the edge of the bed, and then they'll first numb you with a long needle. That's the one that hurts. So know that it feels, from my recollection, like it is similar to a bee sting, but it's a strong bee sting.
Strong, deep bee sting. Yeah.
It's funny how you like black out everything. And I'm like, I think I remember this, but I kind of black out a lot of birth.
Yeah.
And I remember like I had, my nurse, my husband, the anesthesiologist in there. And I was like, someone just tell me a funny story. Like someone needs to be talking. I need to distract myself.
Yeah.
And then I got super lucky and I loved him and he did a phenomenal job. Like I was just numb enough, but still had a lot of my capability. Like he did an amazing job. The hospital sent me, you know, like a survey afterwards of like everything. And I just went on and on about give this a raise.
I feel like I hear more about like the anesthesiologists like making or breaking a birth than almost like anybody else. You know, of course, like your provider or a nurse can totally make or break, but like I feel like it's in that moment where you're like, oh my God, I need help, they're like, can either be so cruel to you as you're in like your most vulnerable moment, or they can be so nurturing, you know, and make you feel okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That was great. We talked about epidural. Now let's talk about C-sections. Okay. And I think this specifically is one that I don't want to like have anyone feel any shame. So specifically for this conversation, this will be about if you are a healthy, low risk pregnancy, what are the risks and benefits of just opting for a C-section?
Yeah. So it's life-saving. Right. Again, thank God we have the option to have a cesarean birth because it's like birth. Babies are still birthed this way. Like as a society, we need to like release that stigma. It's still birth. And there's like many reasons that a C-section is needed for health reasons, right? Medical reasons, breech baby, placenta previa, like so many things. But we're here to talk about like the low risks, right? I would say oftentimes C-sections come up like as the, you know, end result of cascade of interventions. Because it's like that one thing leads to another thing that leads to another thing. But again, it doesn't matter what interventions led to it, because if you get here, if it's used for the true emergent reasons that it needs to be, it's life-saving. Right.
Right.
And not only life-saving for baby, it can be life-saving for mom too. And then other like reasons for like a healthy mom, why you might have to like have a C-section is we've talked about like your water breaking, like the cord could come down first. Absolute reason. Like baby could die. Like we don't want that. Hemorrhaging or like placenta abruption. Like these things do happen. And so thank God we have the option of cesarean sections. And then other times too, like baby just won't come out for whatever reason. Even if you're in this beautiful natural birth experience, the cord could be short, baby could be in an awkward position, baby, you know, could have felt a little stressed out and pooped in, you know, in there, and then isn't tolerating that. There's a lot of different reasons. And I think this is where that like brain acronym can come into play. If it's not this like true emergent right now, get baby out, asking those questions. And if you have a provider that you trust and they can be honest with you, then you can know like, okay, this is the right decision for me.
What about risks and benefits of someone who thinks I'm just going to get scheduled a C-section and then I don't have to deal with contractions and I don't have to deal with pelvic floor, et cetera. Can we talk about misconceptions there?
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's actually like increasing elective C-sections. Like some people are having them after a C-section already, but like some people are just like, I don't want to deal with birth and that's okay. But it's not just like you have this big cut and then all of a sudden you're like walking normal. Society is just like, oh, you just like had a C-section, like get over it. But it is more intense than like taking your appendix out. Like those people get to like take time off. Those people get like a stay in the hospital. Those people get like waited on at home. And this is much more intense. So you're like going through the abdomen. It's a full abdominal surgery. So there is a lot.
And then you have a baby to care for afterwards.
You have a baby to care
for. You don't just get to sit down on the couch and like put your feet up and rest.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And you're not sleeping. You still have to get up to pee. Movement's hard. You can be severely constipated because of the narcotics that were, you know, used. There's risk of infection. There's risk of like numbness at the incision site. You can even like, there's a lot of pelvic floor dysfunction that goes along with it too. Like our core is part of our pelvic floor. So we're kind of messing with this whole trunk pelvic floor stability. So there's like, there is a lot of risks, and like benefits are that like, I'm just like thinking there's some women that have severe sexual trauma that might just be better.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
That might be a better option, and that's okay.
Yeah. Thank God we have that. And again, there's no shame if you do, but there's some risk, like let's talk about the pros and cons.
Even if you just are like, God, I just want one. It's like, yeah, that's okay. Yeah.
As long as it's an informed decision. That's all.
Yeah. As long as you really know what's entailed. Yeah.
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 Awesome. Well, thank you so much for going through everything. This was so amazing.
Now, I always end the episode with asking the guest how people can find them. And obviously, at the time of this, I did that. But all of that changed because Amy has rebranded. So I wanted to let you know that you can find Amy at her Instagram at The Somatic Mother. You can also tune into her podcast, which is called The Somatic Mother as well. Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode. And again, if you've made it this far and you're tuning in every week to the Learning to Mom podcast, please could you do me a favor and write a review wherever you're listening to this podcast on and let me know why you're tuning in every week. It would absolutely make my day and just really keeps me going for it. I will see you next week. Thanks so much.